Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show! Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. I got some very special guests this week. One returning champion under a new title. We're excited to have her back on. She is the senior manager of animation marketing at Viz Media. It's Charlene Ingram. How's it going, Charlene?
Hi, going great.
Really happy to have you back, and we've been waiting ever since you made the jump over to Viz to have you back on, and we'll talk about that in just a minute here. But we're also really pleased to have Brian Ige on. He is the vice president of animation at Viz, and his big thing is Neon Alley, and Brian, we're really happy to have you on.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. This is my first time here, so I'm definitely excited to be on the show and have a chance to hear from the fans and from ANN and get back to you guys with some answers about what we've been doing and what's coming up.
Great. Okay, looking forward to it. So but before we get into the nitty-gritty, Charlene, last time we've had you on the show, we've had you on like three times. You were at Funimation, and now you're at Viz. What happened?
Well, you know, anybody who knows me knows that I have a lot of friends in California. I love California. And I made a promise to my friends when I moved to Texas so many years ago that I was going to work really hard and level up as best I can. Yes, imagine this as a shonen training montage right here. Okay. I'm going to work really hard and level up so I'd be good enough to come back to California someday. And as luck may have it, a position opened up that would allow me to, stretch my muscles a little bit and, really strengthen my, MASH, shonen action, marketing skills, and just be able to, continue to bring positive change in the anime industry. And just this time in California, a place that I really missed, and every time I'd come back for conventions, it would get a little harder each time to leave. So I was just, man, super duper luck. And I'm just really happy to be here. And it's a lot of challenge, and it's a lot of excitement, and I'm really excited about it.
Well, speaking as somebody who really doesn't even like to leave California, I can sympathize on that one a little bit. That's exciting that you're Viz now. So up front here, we actually have never had anyone from Viz Animation on the show. We'd always meant to, but Viz is, maybe this is a stereotype, but the common wisdom, maybe it's not wisdom, the common thinking about Viz is that anime is a secondary thing. It's an afterthought. It's not really as important to the company as animation is, it's not really as important to the company as manga is, and that's why sometimes maybe it seems like it gets kind of the short shrift. And I'm curious if you're hiring or if it's been a new focus for the company. Is there a reconcerted effort to do more with anime?
So Zach, I think you're accurate in terms of how you kind of painted that picture. In the past, and I've been at Viz Media now for about 8 years, so I've been through a lot of transition and a lot of change here at the company. But when I first started, anime has always been an important part of our business. But you're right. I mean, publishing was always the primary focus. Anime was looked upon as a supporting category. It was still a business. It was still something that we, obviously emphasized within Viz Media. But in terms of where it kind of sat in terms of our product mix, manga was the primary product that we were pushing. Over the last few years, there's been kind of a shift in our strategy, and there is definitely a stronger focus on anime. We feel that there are opportunities there in that market that we can capitalize on, given our association with Japan, our ability to acquire and our distribution partners in that space. you're right, adding Charlene was another integral piece to our puzzle in terms of strengthening anime within Viz Media. But you've seen that change sort of happen over the last couple of years, you know, in terms of the way that we've released product, you know, in terms of continuing series on and not stopping them. Neon Alley is another part of that in terms of strengthening our position within the anime space. But we are prioritizing that part of our business just as much as we are manga. So it is definitely a change and a shift in the strategy overall, but we think it's a positive one, and there's a lot of opportunity out there for us for Viz.
Yeah, and just, you know, speaking as someone who was very recently, as of February, an outsider, my first time visiting Viz was my first day I started here. So I had the same perception that a lot of fans have. And I got here, and I was so amazed at such a dynamic and exciting animation team that's here. The building is full of color and full of life, and everybody just interacts so well. Everybody here is nerdy in their own special way. Like, they have that ability to be passionate about something. It might not necessarily be anime or manga, but they have the ability to be passionate about something, and that has just been so infectious, and it makes the days go by so quickly, and I am excited to come to work every day and work with these people. It's just, I had no idea, and hopefully now with, you know, more focus on animation, the fans will see that as well. It's really pretty special.
So this is a refocusing, and I'm curious, given your relation, given Viz's relationship to huge publishers in Japan, we had some representatives from the former company Bandai Entertainment, and their biggest headache was that even though they were a subsidiary of a Japanese distributor, a Japanese producer, they were still forced to bid on titles that their parent company owned. And I'm curious if either of you can talk a little bit about Viz's process for licensing.
Well, I mean, I can't go into too much detail in terms of the sort of detailed specifics in terms of some of that stuff, but I can tell you that in terms of a process, we are on a level playing field with other distributors in the market. So we all go through the same submission process. You know, obviously, our parent companies in Japan do have some of their own properties that are unique to Viz, and there are some advantages to that. However, in terms of the overall acquisition process, I'd say, you know, most of those go through a standardized acquisition, so we're pretty much on the same level playing field as everyone else. And we have to bid not only based on what we're willing to offer in terms of money, but, you know, what we bring to the table in terms of marketing and distribution and product and that sort of thing, which, again, is another reason why we needed to strengthen what we're doing on the product side and how we release product into the market, so that licensors understand that if we do take on a property, that we're going to be passionate about it and see it to its end, and, you know, treat it the way that we would any A-plus property that we have in our catalog.
And I think I've said on ANN Cast before, you know, and I'll say it again, every show, no matter what show, is somebody's all-time favorite show, and it deserves respect. So while not everything can get the same budget, the same marketing force behind it, but everything deserves that focus and that respect. So every title, you know, Viz doesn't have as many catalog titles, but each title gets an all-hands-on-deck focus on it, which is pretty special. I mean, it's really, it's a different way of doing things, and it's pretty cool, honestly.
Right. So, I mean, and I've noticed, like, the titles seem to be focusing on are very broad audience. You don't really seem to be focusing much on niche titles or things that would appeal, like, solely to an otaku crowd. Is that the strategy? Are you sort of going for a Shonen Jump kind of audience there? Or is it just whatever catches your fancy? I mean, I'm curious, like, what kind of titles are you generally going after?
Yeah, I mean, that is the strategy for now. You know, that may change going forward. I think we are starting to explore more niche titles and titles that play more towards a specific target within the anime overall anime audience. But, you know, given who our distributor is in the market, and our strengths in terms of what we bring to the anime space, we feel that for now we're best suited with looking for titles that have that sort of crossover appeal into a mass audience. But at the same time, you know, there have been discussions internally about looking at titles that can play towards a smaller audience. So we are looking at that as well. But as of now, for right now, actually, you know, our strategy is to try to find titles that can appeal to both that core fan that can be a fan favorite, but also could potentially cross over into a mass market.
Okay, so you're generally just not looking at things like, you know, super moe girl stuff, or like, you know, you know, Noe Chamine arty shows, you know, things like that.
Well, the deciding factor is, will this work at mass retail?
Right.
To a certain degree. So, and that is absolutely, you know, agnostic of genre, target, whatever. It's, will it work at these mass retailers that we place in? You know, essentially, it's like any title. Will it make money? If the answer is yes, then we're going to look at it.
And I think the other thing to mention is that, you know, there are studios in the space like Sentai or Funimation that also look at titles like that, and they do those titles very well. So, you know, for us, what we want to do is, before we start looking into other categories, we want to be great at the space that we're in right now, which can be challenging. You know, our goal overall is to help expand anime to a broader audience, which hopefully will benefit everybody. We want to kind of be the gateway company, you know, to content, and so that fans will discover through us and explore through other studios. But, you know, first things first, we're trying to, you know, really figure out the best way to broaden the anime audience. But that's, again, not to say that we won't look at other types of other categories of content in the future. I think, you know, we look at everything every season, and we determine based on that slate what makes sense for our business given our cost structure and how we do business here.
So right now, like, you know, this, we're recording this mid-July, kind of smack in the middle of convention season. What are your priority titles right now for this month and in the next couple of months? Like, what are you most excited about? I mean, I know you're going to say, "Oh, we're excited about all of our titles," but like, what's your marquee attraction?
Well, I mean, we just announced Bloodlat, so we're extremely excited about that title. You know, it had a built-in manga fan base that has been very passionate about the anime. We've seen some really good results with the simulcast so far. In addition to that, we also made an announcement about Gargantia. We think that, again, is another great series that, you know, after I watched it, I felt that that's something that I could show my mom or my aunt or somebody that has never seen anime before. And they would be, you know, I think it's that type of show that you could introduce it to anybody. Whereas with Bloodlad, you know, it's a little more for the core fan. I mean, there are going to be tropes and things in there that are going to be specific that you would need to somewhat understand to understand the humor in it. But those two, I think, for me right now, are kind of my big priority. We also have catalog titles, or not catalog titles, but titles that are going to be released very soon on DVD that we're excited about, like the upcoming Berserk movie. And then I still, you know, to this day, I still truly, truly believe in Tiger and Bunny. I think that that series has so much potential that, you know, we're continuing to look for ways to get that in front of a larger audience. But, I mean, as of right now, those are kind of what's on my radar. But, you know, again, we do have other titles that are coming up soon, like Zetman, Excel World, that are going to get their initial release that we're extremely excited about. And also titles like Lagrange that just recently launched that we're still trying to support. But what I mentioned earlier is really kind of what's in front of me that I'm looking at.
Yeah, and for, you know, me coming, all this coming off AX, we're still a little bit on a K high. That K events went exceedingly beyond expectations well. Those were fantastic. Huge response. And of course, Berserk coming up in just a couple weeks. We did that movie premiere that was really, really fun and exciting, especially with all those scary Behelit masks. Those were great. And of course, all the titles that Brian mentioned. You know, Bloodlad, I'm really, really excited about it. I've been reading the manga, and it really reminded me of Soul Eater and Bleach back at the beginning, and it got me really excited again. And then seeing it animated and seeing how it's progressing just like the manga, it's I'm really, really excited about this one. This is one that I actually, 9 in the morning every Sunday, like, I set my alarm yesterday so I could get up and watch Blood Lad on Hulu so I can have that experience. So yeah, Blood Lad is so exciting because it's kind of letting my fangirl come out a little bit, and it's something to really look forward to every week.
Cool. I want to talk a little bit about Tiger and Buddy because you guys took a lot of heat for your handling of that show. I think a lot of people, when that show came out, saw it as sort of a great hope for anime because it had such broad appeal. It was about superheroes. It had a good story. It had a nice hook. Like, you know, the animation, at least in the first half, was really good. Like, you know, people saw it as like, hey, this could be a breakout mainstream thing. But it kind of took forever to come out, and everyone kept saying, why isn't this on Cartoon Network? Why isn't this on Adult Swim? Get it on Adult Swim. Get it on Adult Swim. That never happened, and then it kind of took a really long time for that show to come out. You know, without making you, like, sort of cop to, boy, we sure did screw that up, like, what was the strategy with Tiger and Bunny, and was there any thought, hey, we're not getting this out fast enough?
Well, I mean, I think the goal was to get that in front of the biggest and largest possible anime viewing audience, which would be on, you know, Toonami, Adult Swim.
Yeah.
But again, we're not in control of that channel, so all we can do is solicit the title. In terms of when a decision takes place or when they decide to take something or not take something, that's not up to us.
Sure.
So a lot of the delay, and again, I'm not trying to throw any companies under the bus or anything like that. You know, I'm just saying that a lot of the things that happened in terms of delays and things were behind the scenes, but they were necessary in order for us to try to give it the right possible type of initial showing into the market. You know, again, we had solicited that multiple times through multiple television partners. And the reason why we held back on the release is because we wanted to give broadcasters the opportunity to have their initial run on that, which is usually the most appealing to them. But, you know, again, we don't control the timing behind that on when decisions are made. And, you know, we wanted to give it every possible hope of being on broadcast before we released it the way that we did. So, you know, really that's kind of the behind-the-scenes story, is that we were trying to get it on broadcast and we made every attempt to do so. But at the end of the day, you know, there were no broadcasters that were interested in taking on that property. And we had done multiple pitches to the same networks over and over to see whether or not there was any interest. And I'm not sure how they make selections, how the broadcasters do that, but unfortunately, it was not one of the shows that they had chosen. We continue to solicit it to this day. You know, so I have media kits and packs that go out to broadcasters on a pretty consistent basis. You know, but again, we want to find the right home for it. You know, we want to make sure that you know, ideally for us, we would love to see it on a place like Toonami. You know, that's not something that we are against in any way. I mean, I think that would be our first choice, to be honest with you. But trust me, if we were programming that channel, that would be in prime time. So,
right.
You know, that's really kind of what's behind it and why it took a little longer than usual to get out. It's because we were actually holding out for hope that it would be selected by a broadcaster.
Yeah, and when Brian is very, very actively been hustling Tiger and Bunny, and it's just, it seems like such a logical choice, but there just hasn't been anybody biting at it yet.
That's really weird to me, because it seems like such a, and it seems like kind of like that, maybe just, you know, in our anime fan bubble, we look at that and go, oh, this is mainstream, and networks look at it and go, what? I mean, I don't know. But there was some that sort of kills that, because there was some speculation that it was being held on to become the flagship title for Neon Alley, but I guess that's not the case.
No, that Neon Alley was never meant to be that. I mean, Neon Alley is basically a backup that to broadcast. I mean, we want to be able to, and we'll get a little more into that when we talk about that particular piece, but we needed an outlet. I mean, honestly, there, you know, without, like I mentioned to you, we don't control inventory on TV, scheduling, or programming, but we still need a way, an initial release window, to give fans an opportunity to see content. you know, without having to commit to buying DVD sets. You know, we wanted people to have that opportunity to, you know, preview it before you buy it. And that's what broadcast did for a lot of people. And, you know, without that component being available, we just felt that we couldn't wait. We can't wait for broadcasters to figure out whether or not anime fits into their programming needs. What we wanted to do is build our own and say, okay, if broadcasters are not willing to take this content, then at least we have a home for it. And not for just our content, but other studio content, other studios that need to find a way to get their content out in front of an audience to preview it and, you know, really expose it to somebody who may not be aware of it.
And fans can still, you know, if you have a network and there's a channel you want to see a certain program on, you know, they're probably more likely willing to listen to their viewers than a company that's, you know, pitching everything. So if there's something you're really passionate about, you know, fans do have power, and we're doing everything that we can. And hopefully, you know, maybe someday someone will take Tiger Bunny and just take it to the next level. But you never know.
But I can tell you we're still pitching it to this day to broadcasters.
Okay. All right. Okay. And I wanted to ask a little bit about Berserk. I was curious to know if you guys had internally screened that third film yet, and if you're freaking out about the content and how to present it.
I'm not freaking out, but then again, I'm a depraved individual. Nothing can shock me.
I mean, we have seen it. You know, obviously, we have a legal process that we run through internally to make sure that what we put out there is properly labeled for consumers. You know, again, that's, we really feel that it is an extremely strong title, and that the content is great. It is shocking. It is a little more, what's the right word, explicit and mature than what you would typically label a mature product as. So, you know, on our end, we just want to make sure that before somebody buys it or somebody sees it, that they're fully aware of what they're picking up before they get into it. But yes, we were a little shocked, and well, at least I was, maybe not Charlene, but I was. And, you know, we just want to make sure that when that product does hit the market, that people that are purchasing it are fully aware of what they are getting.
Yeah, I mean, as long as we're very, very clear that Berserk isn't a feel-good buddy comedy at all, it is very explicit, it's very visual. You're supposed to feel a little weird as you're reading it and as you're watching it, and that way it absolutely succeeds. Yes, the third movie is absolutely brutal, but it is Berserk, and it's kind of beautiful in its brutality.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very, I think it's a very nice ending note to the trilogy.
So, I mean, are your plans for that one similar to what you did with the first two? Are you going to have, you know, convention premieres and a lot of screenings and stuff? Because I can imagine, like, with that one in particular, you're going to have to be pretty vigilant in terms of, like, you know, making sure everyone in the room is over 18, that kind of thing. Logistically, it might be a little bit more difficult. I don't know.
Well, you can card at, you know, you have to, whatever convention gets the premiere will be very, very insistent on it's carded. It's not going to be some type of afternoon event.
Right, yeah.
Do to make sure that it's an over 18 crowd. Be very upfront that it is explicit content. It's very, it's rough stuff. So as long as everybody knows what they're getting into, but if they've seen the first two Berserk movies, they kind of got a feeling of what's going on. I don't imagine a lot of people are just going to pop in for the third movie.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And then we are planning some other potential events around that. But, you know, to your point, you're right. I mean, there is definitely a... we have to kind of make sure that we're positioning things properly to our audience when we set up these events. But we do feel that it's a very, very special and unique property. And, you know, we are looking for ways to, again, find a way to expand that 18 and over audience using the Berserk trilogy.
Okay, great. Well, so let's talk about Neon Alley before we get into Twitter here. So you're coming up on about a year on Neon Alley, right?
Yeah, we launched last October, so we're about 9 months in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think last summer was when all the announcements were being made. And that kind of thing, if mm-hmm. I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And so the idea behind this is that it is basically a linear cable channel that you get on your PS3, and I think you've got it now on Xbox and a couple of other different devices.
Online.
And right, yeah, and now you can just watch it on your PC, which I'm sure makes a lot of people happy. And I did notice that your logo showed up a few times during E3 press conferences during console reveals, so congratulations on that. It's a nice placement in there. And I noticed during the during coverage on some other video game websites, they were like, well, we're looking at these, they're like, what's Neon Alley? Like, people didn't. Yeah. They're like, okay, Hulu, ESPN, what is Neon Alley? So that was fun. But I want to know, first of all, how is it doing?
Well, I mean, I think in terms of for what it is right now, we feel that it has been successful in terms of our expectations for where we are right now in the service. Is it where we want to be in a year? Definitely not. I mean, we still see a lot of room for growth, a lot of potential in the service. We still feel that we don't have a full product on the market yet. You know, the goal initially was to release the linear stream to see whether or not that was an actual viable product, whether or not people would be interested in watching a linear anime stream, similar to what you see on Toonami. And, you know, we felt based on the initial response that people were into it, and we're continuing now to build out the channel. The next big step for us is, you know, adding on our catch-up component. And at that point, we feel we'll have a complete product, sort of a broadcast linear channel with the opportunity for you to watch programming in case you miss it.
Okay, so the idea is to eventually add some kind of on-demand.
Correct. That will be, sure. I'd say, within the next quarter or so, that will become available.
Okay, because, that is obviously the biggest thing everyone talks about with Neon Alley, which is, why is this a linear cable channel in the age of streaming, in the age of everything on demand? Why would you do it that way? And was it just like, did someone just have the idea, hey, what about linear? Let's really give that a shot? I mean, why? Like, why did you go down that road?
Okay, I mean, first thing that we should explain first is Neon Alley is a product that wasn't created for everybody. I mean, it was created for a mass casual consumer and a core fan, somebody that, you know, watches Toonami. They maybe don't know where to go after they see Bleach or Naruto. I mean, the anime category itself has hundreds and hundreds of shows, hundreds of different categories within that. And we're really, what we're trying to do is we're trying to be a gateway to a casual fan, introduce them to content that hopefully they'll be able to easily connect with and hope go from there. You know, the goal is to have them explore things on Crunchyroll eventually, or go to Sentai and buy more niche titles, or, you know, look through Funimation's catalog. But the goal for Neon Alley was really to be kind of a gateway into the anime industry. You know, all of the rest of the on-demand services can, one, be intimidating to a new user, and also, if you don't really know what you're looking for, it could be kind of a daunting task in terms of finding quality shows in a catalog of 1,000. And so our goal was really to try to curate the content, find content, new content that we feel is good, past content that we feel new anime fans should watch, and also content from other studios, you know, great content from other partners in the space, and really kind of use Neon Alley as an exposure tool for the category, which is the other reason we talk about conventions and you know, behind the scenes coverage at events. We talk about top 10 lists for manga and anime, and you know, we have trailers for products. I mean, we really want it to be kind of a gateway and a 101 for a casual fan to say, I didn't realize all these things existed in this world, because we look at it as a lifestyle, and you know, we want people to get exposed to that and all the different parts of it. So it's not just about Neon Alley and Viz Media Service. I mean, we were really trying to build a product that, you know, we hoped could be a way for somebody who doesn't know really much about the category to get their feet wet, and hopefully it'll cause them to explore more in the category itself.
Yeah, and it's a, you know, the key term is it's an exposure platform. It's a way, it's a non-intimidating way for people who are new to the, you know, new to the medium of anime and, know, or maybe don't know what they want to pick out of a list of a million things. So you go to any of the other VOD services, and there's just thousands and thousands of videos. It's really difficult. And with Neon Alley, you can just get exposed to what your next favorite show would be. And it took me a couple of weekends, honestly, having just Neon Alley on in the background. And then I realized that it's such a really, really cool concept. Because I could just have anime on the background while I'm cleaning my house, while I'm sewing costumes, while I'm doing all these things. And I don't have to change the DVDs. And I fall in love all over again with these series that I've known. Like, I started watching Nana, and then I fell out of it. And I started watching again on Neon Alley, and I really liked it. And I found out that I really liked Busa Renkin, and I really like seeing the premieres. And it's just, I've been saying on panels that Neon Alley is another part of your anime diet. It's not going to be like the other services. And why would you want another service that's a clone of everything else? There's no need for that, because that need's already been filled. But as far as a channel that cultivates an anime culture, that 100% of even advertising is relevant to anime fans, there's nothing else like that. Like, even if you get a title on Adult Swim or Toonami, you get a lot of, you know, insurance commercials and things like that. Mm-hmm. Well, everything on Neon Alley is absolutely anime-focused. So it's very unique in that way, and it's very cool and charming, actually. And it does, you know, for lazy cosplayers like me sewing and don't want to change the DVDs, it's great.
So the idea here is that I understand the concept. It's the execution that it still has a question mark over my head. For something like that, where you've got a casual audience, which is your stated goal, is to, you know, have basically a linear channel that a casual guy can just turn on and say, all right, show me some anime. Maybe he doesn't like the thing that's on, but he waits 20 minutes and there's something else that he's never seen before, and he just gets exposed to a whole bunch of stuff. That would be great if it were an actual cable channel and he turned on his TV and could just go to that channel, but this is a pay service that he's got to sign up for specifically through a set-top box. Like, the barrier of entry suggests not casual, even though the channel itself is aimed at casual people.
Yes.
How do you reconcile that?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, what we're looking at, and this is where, you know, we feel that it's a different approach, is that there are a lot of cable cutters now, cord cutters. I mean, you know, people are viewing media in different ways. The game consoles now are turning more into home entertainment devices. That was one of the reasons why we started with those platforms, is, you know, we want to be part of that shift. If we're on, you know, a regular broadcast, there's a couple of limitations. I mean, if you're a channel on DirecTV, you're not going to be on Comcast, most likely, or vice versa. Or you don't have the ability to go into Canada because it's a different territory and there are restrictions in terms of broadcast. There are FCC regulations in terms of what you can and can't show. You know, so there are also challenges with broadcast. And another thing to keep in mind is that people actually pay for things like Adult Swim and Toonami. I mean, they're part of a cable package, but they aren't free channels. So, you know, again, what we wanted to do is we wanted to be kind of on the edge of where the transition is happening in terms of how people are going to be viewing television in the future and getting their media. And we feel that, you know, more and more people are going to look for other ways to watch content that they enjoy, whether it's through the internet, whether it's through gaming consoles. But in terms of, you know, traditional cable and satellite, you know, again, there were limitations in terms of those types of platforms, which is the reason why we wanted to take another approach. Which isn't to say if, you know, DirecTV came to us tomorrow and said, hey, do you want to be a channel on our service, that we would say no. But, you know, that the likelihood of that happening is very slim. And so, you know, we just didn't want to sit back anymore and just kind of wait for something to happen in terms of broadcast or an exposure platform. So we wanted to be proactive and try to put something together, you know, in hopes that it'll be another way for fans to watch content.
Okay, interesting. All right, so people can look forward to that on-demand service coming pretty soon, sometime, you said, in the next quarter.
Yes.
We're working on it very, very hard. And one thing is, we're not going to release it to the public until we're 100% confident that it's going to work. So it's taking a little bit of time to cook, but it's just making sure that it's perfect and it's the same equally good user experience, whether you're watching online, whether you're a PS3 user or you're an Xbox user. Just to make sure it's completely stable across everything before rolling it out fully.
Okay. All right, good to know. Okay, let's go ahead and... Actually, before we get to Twitter, one other thing I wanted to ask, and we always ask this of when we have anime people on. I wanted to know, curiously, what are your best performing titles on DVD and Blu-ray right now? If you can share that information.
Besides Naruto and Bleach?
Yeah, we can go ahead and leave those out.
Because the kids, they really like Naruto and Bleach.
What? You don't say.
So, for us... I ran some numbers, and what's doing well are Lagrange is doing pretty well, and Neuro, Rise of Yokai Clan, is performing strongly, and a really strong evergreen title that still keeps hitting it out of the park, Vampire Knight. Every week, Vampire Knight.
Really?
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff in and on the streaming end. Blood Lad is just doing amazing numbers, and the Tiger and Bunny Dub preview episodes are doing very well.
Great. Okay. Well, good to know. I suppose you can't share any flops with us.
No, there are no flops like you're thinking.
There's single failure. That's what you're telling me.
No, there's no like cry in your hands and weep. There's none of those.
Well, you guys are pretty careful about that. So
we don't have a lot of titles, but we put so much focus on them that. If one looked like it was not going to do well, we'd have to think of another plan. But everything's been pretty good so far.
Great. Okay.
Stand up for you, Brad?
No, I mean, I think those are, this was released a while back, but, the Berserk movie actually did above what our expectations were in terms of the sell-through for that particular title. So we're looking forward to the release of the second and third.
Great.
And Berserk was before my time, but yes.
Okay. All right. Let's get to Twitter here from Essay the Third. It's kind of a weird question, but I'll ask it anyway. Do you think you jumped the gun when you picked up the DVD and Blu-ray rights to Blood Lad instead of waiting until the simulcast was over?
Well, I don't think jumped the gun by any stretch of the imagination, because the manga has been performing very strongly. Every week, every single volume has been performing very strongly. And, when you pick up a title for streaming, if you're a company like Viz, you really have to think of the full life cycle of the product. And, very few titles can 100%, make the money they need to on streaming. So you have to think about the entire release plan. And Blood Lad totally fit into all that. So it was kind of a no-brainer.
Mr. McCord Christian asks, and I'm actually extremely curious about this too, and I waited until Twitter time to get to it, but very, very curious to know if you still have the rights to older stuff like Ranma and Maze on Ikkoku, and if so, have you thought about re-releases?
There are active negotiations happening for a couple of those titles that you mentioned. We actually can't comment on that right now because they are happening as we speak. But we are looking, again, if things go the way that we plan them, then we're hoping to make some announcements soon, very soon, about some of the properties that you just mentioned.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Fingers crossed, wish upon a star.
Yeah, I think you're sitting, maybe not quite the size of a Sailor Moon, but I think you're sitting on a gigantic nostalgia money bomb with Ranma 1/2.
I managed to get a chance to look at the Ranma Blu-rays that came out of Japan, because I am, as you know from Adam, I too am, I'm a Ranma kid. I started with Ranma comics, and seeing those Blu-rays from Japan, holy crap, just the opening credits, just sitting in front of the TV with my jaw to the ground, drooling. I had no idea Genma had that much detail on him. So, fingers crossed.
That is money on the table. Well, that's good news. So, also from SA the Third, are we going to see any results in the future from the survey you put out in March, i.e. titles that were most requested, limited edition sets?
Well, we can't really say all the most popular titles, because that would just be tipping our hand, because we know everybody listens to this. But it's a lot of the titles that should be expected. And as for the full survey results, again, Well, you keep that information for marketing purposes, but I will share a couple of points that were very interesting. And one I'm extremely excited about is the gender split is getting really close to 50-50, more so than I've ever seen it.
Wow.
It used to be, you know, 5 years ago in anime, it'd be 70-30 male. And now it's getting really, really close to half and half. So I'm excited to see, you know, even distribution of genders. I think that's going to add some really cool diversity to your marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll see another little tidbit. DVD Blu-ray combo packs are a very polarizing subject.
Right.
People tend to either love them with all their heart or hate them with all their heart.
Right.
But, yeah, a lot of the popular titles are, you know, just things that are new. Some of the write-ins were brilliant. It gave us a lot of laughs. I'd say the write-in responses for JoJo's in particular were some of the best examples of creative writing I've seen in years. yeah, complete with sound effects and everything. But yes, that survey, I personally read every single response and categorized them. And it was a lot of really good data, and we'll probably have another survey here fairly soon.
Yeah, we can't necessarily, you know, to Charlene's point, speak so much about the properties that we're looking at. It does give us a very good indication of what we should be looking at, and we definitely, to her point, read all of the responses. But in terms of the limited edition stuff, you know, we want to, you know, we really appreciate actually all of the feedback because, again, these help guide our decisions. You know, as we mentioned, we are really trying to refocus our efforts on the anime space, not only in terms of the content, but also the product side of the business. And so, you know, we appreciate all of the honest responses and the people that, you know, answer seriously and really give us real feedback because we take that to heart and we are planning to, you know, use that data to help build out some of the future DVD and Blu-ray sets that we're looking at. So we really appreciate that information.
Yeah, and the honesty is very appreciated. As much as I would like to reach through the screen and go, okay, be nice. Even, the, I mean, some of the responses were pretty rough, but you know what? We needed to hear that. We need to hear everybody's honest opinion so everything can be better. Yet a lot of people just, like, you know, gushing with their hearts how much they loved everything, and then some people were strongly opinionated on other stuff. But it was all really good data, and I personally, I really thank the fans for being so honest about it because, you know, it helped us out a whole bunch.
Great. Okay, Keikaku Cat asks, any chance of Death Note getting the anime series getting a Blu-ray release?
So that's, you know, a good question. We would honestly love to see Death Note on Blu-ray. I think it would be an amazing series on Blu-ray. The challenge for us is that, you know, most of the time we're limited to the assets that are available to us from Japan. So a lot of the times if you don't see a Blu-ray release from us, it usually means that there aren't any available assets to create a high-quality product to release here in the U.S. market. You know, if we're going to go down that route with a property like Death Note, we want to make sure that it is, you know, the best-looking, high-definition Blu-ray product available. And, you know, unfortunately, there just isn't the available assets at this point to build out something like that. We're hoping that in the future it does become available or that there'll be a future collaboration for that to be created, but as of right now, I can tell you that there's nothing in the works, so I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Yeah, HD masters are very critical to having a good Blu-ray product.
Yeah, especially in a mid-2000s show like Death Note, it's going to like look like total garbage if you just upscale it. Like, that needs an HD.
Especially with that dark palette, it's just...
Yeah. That would be rough.
We just don't want to go down that route unless we know that we can put out, you know, the quality that people would want to see in that product.
Right. Okay, so Chronoclast 1 asks, any plans to re-release Honey and Clover and Nana in lower-priced DVD sets?
Yeah, so one of our strategies that we're looking at in terms of our anime business is going back to our catalog for some of our more, you know, well-known series and reducing the prices on them. So the two that you had mentioned are Honey and Clover in particular. You know, we are going to be looking this holiday season to potentially to reduce the price. So I was mentioning stay tuned to our Facebook page, sign up for the Biz newsletter and social media. Those people will be the first to know when the price reductions happen on some of our more popular catalog titles. But Honey and Clover will be one of them.
Okay, great.
Yep, and they're just, I mean, they're just really great titles that people should be exposed to. I mean, really, if you're, I mean, especially if you're a fan of the Noitamina shows, Honey and Clover is an absolute must-watch. Nana is a must-watch for drama done really, really well. So, yeah, definitely stay tuned. We want to lower the prices and make them a little bit more accessible to people.
Okay. Tangy Tangerine 2 asks, and, you know, once again, this is probably something you can't comment on, but I am curious to know if you're even thinking about it. Since Animego doesn't have a license anymore, are you even thinking about Lum, your DC Yatsura? The anime.
Oh, you're saying Yatsura?
Yeah.
That was Animego, right?
It was. They don't have a license anymore.
Well, I mean, to be completely honest, it's not on our radar, at least on my radar right now. You know, that's not to say that it won't be. If people are really interested in Viz Media picking up that license, you know, again, I think what we want to do is really find titles that we feel will fit within a certain the audience that we're trying to market to. And, you know, if there's enough demand behind it, it's something that we'll take seriously. But to be completely honest, it's not on my radar, at least right now.
Yeah, that's kind of a, you know, ancient hundreds episodes long sitcom that...
Yeah, I mean...
Long series are difficult.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're very, very difficult to get them to stay on shelf. And it's even more difficult if they're older. But again, good content always finds an audience.
Well, yeah, and you know, with Lum, it's one of those things where it just, in America, it just doesn't have the nostalgia base that Ranma has, or even like Meizani Koku. Like, it just didn't catch on quite in the way those did in the 90s. So, yeah, that's a tough one. Trick the TMS, and we got a lot of questions about Monster, so we'll just kind of stuff them in here. What happened with Monster, and since you distribute your series through Warner Brothers, any thought at all of considering something similar to their MOD service, so Movies on Demand service, for harder sell series like Monster?
Okay, so let me answer the first part first in regarding Monster. So as for Monster right now, you know, I would like to let everybody know that our license has expired for that title. So as of right now, you know, we don't have the ability to do anything else with that series. You know, we are removing it from all streaming sites, download to own, the physical product that was limited in terms of just being one release out in the market will be sold down. And it's unfortunate. I mean, to be honest with you, it was, from the time that I started here, one of my most favorite series of all.
Mine too.
And it was an extremely difficult decision to make. There was a lot of internal battling about how to treat the remainder of the property. But to be completely honest, at the end of the day, it's a business. And it's unfortunate that we weren't able to make that into something that could work. So, you know, because of that, that's the reason why the license has expired. And, you know, hopefully somebody will eventually look at that and be able to really pick it up and treat it and release it to the audience the way that it should be released. So.
And I will add another grace note to that. When it comes to anime releases, it's really not that much different from theatrical releases in that your first release means everything as far as sales goes. It's not much different than the first week at the box office. A series is judged to perform well by its first week, by people pre-ordering and buying the first release in that release week, how strongly it ranks, because that sends a message to the retailers are, you know, do we want to take part two? Do we want to put it on our shelf? Or, and then part three, part four, part however many, you know, many releases it has. So the best thing any fan can do if they really, really love a series is get on board at that first release. Send that message. Vote with your wallets. Because, I mean, it was well before my time, but fans put a lot of heart and soul into getting Monster out there. And, I mean, I bought the box set. I don't know how many of you guys did. But definitely, if there's a show that you really want to love and support, get in there early. And just, you know, get in there early, get your pre-orders in, get it on release week, do whatever it takes. Because that... it's a business decision, and that sends a message to the retailer to continue to support it. Because we can't sell these discs out of the back of our cars. They have to be on a retail shelf or a virtual shelf, like an Amazon Right Stuff.
And what about that Movies on Demand question? Any thoughts?
Yes, I'm sorry. So yeah, on the Movies on Demand, so the issue that I've seen, and I've ordered a few, and we work with Warner Brothers, you know, to that person's point, that there is a manufacturing on demand component. However, to be completely honest, I've never been satisfied with the quality of that. I felt that the packaging and things that it came with were not up to par in terms of what I would consider a legitimate release. Mm. A lot of them have the look and feel of like a bootleg product.
Yeah.
And I just don't feel that our licenses or our properties should be released that way. So if they do make improvements to that and I see a better quality coming out from that, it could be a possibility for the future. And again, I looked at it maybe a year ago in terms of the quality, so it's maybe something I could re-explore. I mean, if fans think that the level of the quality that they're coming out with on manufacturing on demand is something that they would be willing to pay for, then we'll look at it. I mean, I'll be completely honest. I mean, I will explore it. But from what I've seen in the past, it didn't justify any further exploration.
Okay. Tundog wants to know if there are any plans to bring Neon Alley to phones or tablets.
Well, we are looking at, we just released the web app. So our team now is focused on continuing to expand the distribution. We're doing more surveys. We're reaching out to the audience again to really figure out what the next best strategic move for us is in terms of expansion. There's a lot of things on the table. There's things like Roku. There's things like the Wii U. Obviously there's next gen devices that are coming up. There's tablets, there's smartphones. So we are going to continue to expand, and we are looking to continue to expand. We don't know which device or which area we are going to next. Again, the next step for us is to continue to do more research and surveys and really figure out what our audience would like to see next. That's how we came to the decision for the web. And I think in terms of future expansion, that's what we're going to continue to do. It's, build this for the fans and wherever they want to see it go. If it makes business sense for us, then we'll put it there. So I don't want to say no at this time or yes. I mean, it's something that's on the table. And as we release surveys and questions about it, we hope that the fans will respond. And based on those responses, we'll figure out our next move.
Yeah, and you can always, always hit us up on social media. Again, we read everything. And I hang out on this Facebook page all day, on Neon Alley's all day. So if you've got something that you're really, really passionate about, Roku people, I'm talking to you. You guys are the most passionate of the bunch. Just definitely let us know, because there are a whole lot of devices out there to expand to. We want to make sure whichever one we go to next reaches the widest audience possible.
Okay. Next two we got from a lot of people, actually. Really wanting to know what's with the subtitle restrictions on recent releases. If you're going to lock people out, then please have a dub. Please have a signs and song subtitle track for the dub.
Well, when subtitle restrictions are put on discs, it's because the licensor requires it.
Right.
Again, these properties, they don't belong to the licensee. They belong to the master IP holder, and they can decide what they want on their discs. For some titles, they want subtitles locked on the Blu-ray, the DVD, or both. As for signs and song subtitles, it's something that we're looking to integrate in the future. We're actively working on it, but it's going to it's going to take time. Look at it starting to show up on some of the fall titles, the things that we can affect now. So definitely, we're always exploring ways to get around it. But for now, that's the solution the licensors want, and we absolutely have to respect that.
For the signs portion and everything, that's something that we've gotten feedback on, and we're going to implement that going forward. So.
Okay. A lot of people asking about Hikaru no Go. Do you still have the license, and is that even a candidate for a physical re-release?
Yes. So to answer your question, we do still have the license for that title. It's currently only available on digital distribution platforms like iTunes and Amazon and the game consoles. It's definitely possible that we could do a re-release of that. I mean, I know that it was only released at one point in episodic format. So it is eligible and would be a candidate for something like that. We do have other titles right now that we are looking at releasing, but you know, we will eventually explore that again and see if it's a viable release for our market. I mean, everything runs through a financial, you know, we run through numbers and we, you know, there are resources, resource implications and things behind creating new products. So we just want to make sure that we're putting out the things that mean the most to the fans at that time. You know, there are other products now that fans want us to push out immediately. And so we're working on those. But I can tell you that, you know, we still have the license and it is definitely a title that we will look at again, but we do have a few other priorities in line right now.
Okay. Last couple of questions here from Yao Ling. Any chance of doing more limited edition type sets like the Bleach or Naruto ones before they got shrunk down? So it used to be like, you know, you'd buy a Naruto DVD, you get like a little action figure or something with it. I don't think you guys really do that stuff anymore. Any chance on returning to that?
So I don't think it's going to come back with the figures and stuff, but, you know, based on the survey data, based on observing things, you know, my past experience, of course, being part of it, we're doing some more exciting things with some of our titles that aren't going to be super duper mass, like Naruto and Bleach. Definitely exploring some stuff with packaging. People are really passionate about the packaging. They want something beautiful on their shelf. And the extra features as well, because it's not just how pretty the box looks. It's the quality of the contents inside. So we're working on ways to beef up both. You'll start seeing some little, you know, some baby step stuff starting first. And then as we can really affect things, some pretty neat developments possibly for K I'm really excited about, but stay tuned for all the details. But we're going to try to do something special with several of the shows going forward.
Okay. And last question here from Berserk Claymore wants to know your process for selecting a dub studio. You guys use a couple of different ones. And just curious, you know, who you pick and why you pick them and what decisions go into that process.
Well, I mean, you know, I think there for us, there's a vetting process. You know, like you mentioned, we work with multiple studios. We assign producers here internally to the project. These producers have experience working with those different studios, so they will look at a particular property and try to match that up with with the studio that they think would work best for that particular property. We really try to make sure that we pair the right property with the right studio, because we know that, you know, for us, dubbing is a premium for the product. It is, you know, the part that we invest in heavily, and we want to make sure that it fits well with the property and that it looks like it belongs together. And so a lot of it is dependent on our producers and their experience working with the studios, as well as knowing the voice actors and the type of property that we're trying to put together.
Yeah, it's every, you know, there's a dub producer for every single show, and they all have relationships with all the studios. And they, you know, they actively do the research, and they make sure they find the absolute best fit. Those guys are exceedingly hardworking, and they put so much thought and care into everything they do. It's really, it's honestly, it's pretty mesmerizing to watch it. And I think it's a really cool concept to have that flexibility to go to the studios that you need for the project that you have. And it really adds a way to really tailor the release to, you know, reach its maximum potential. So I think while I do miss being able to, you know, walk across the building and sit in the studio and just listen to the actors, they've got a really, really good system going on. And just a lot of flexibility to get stuff out even faster.
Right. Okay. All right, guys. Well, that actually wraps it for us. Can't thank you enough for coming by and taking all those questions. It was a pleasure to have you guys on. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Zach. Appreciate it.
Yes, and do definitely let the fans know that we are, you know, things are definitely changing over here, and we're definitely doing a lot of stuff, a lot of exciting things, and you just want to grow anime and want to, you know, grow its exposure in this space and just bring a lot more people into the medium. I mean, more people have been going to conventions, so there's more anime fans out there, and we want to continue to give them the gateway titles and the comfort food to keep them anime fans for a long time. It's very important, because, you know, a lot of us through anime found our best friends in our lives. You know, the people that we're going to be, you know, bridesmaids or groomsmen in their wedding, you know, people who, you know, we might see them have children someday. You make lifelong friends through anime, and it all starts with a first title. And hopefully we can have those first titles for lots of people.
All right. Well then, good luck with that. all right, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Charlene and Brian for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating, a little review. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you all next time.